In 2009, Charles Armstrong launched the Trampery, the first co-working space to take root in Shoreditch, a district of East London that has since become crowded with shared workspaces, catering to the area's creative and entrepreneurial communities. Over the past 9 years, Charles has grown the Trampery brand and opened several more properties across the capital, but he is now in the process of completing a project on a far grander scale. The Trampery Fish Island Village is a new mixed-use development in Hackney Wick, which will include London's largest dedicated campus for emerging fashion labels. The Trampery will be providing 58,000 square feet of affordable studio and workspace across 11 buildings. This is The Entrepreneurs with me, Matt Alagaya. On this week's episode, Charles Armstrong talks us through what the Trampery Fish Island Village will mean for the UK's fashion industry. But first, he explains how his entrepreneurial career started early.
Well, I think looking back, the clues are fairly clear, although neither I nor anybody else probably recognised them at the time. I think the first thing that I could pick out is when I was 7 years old at primary school in Cornwall, I realised that people never had erasers in class. And I was always super organized and I had them and people were always borrowing them from me. So I'm almost ashamed to admit it in retrospect, but I actually introduced a rental scheme for erasers in my primary school that for a penny a month or something, you could have erasers on tap. And I think that was my first entrepreneurial impulse.
That's quite extraordinary. You don't need to be ashamed of that. That's a good entrepreneurial spirit there coming through at an early age.
Well, you have to realise that this was the era of Margaret Thatcher and the world's values are a little different. I'm pleased to say that I've become more socially focused rather than capitalistically focused since then.
Let's talk a little bit about later life, shall we? When did you start thinking that you wanted to set up a business? Obviously, you founded the Trampery in 2009, but what were you doing before that?
Well, before that, I'd established a small software business. And prior to that, I'd really been heavily involved in the social entrepreneurship movement, working with Lord Young of Dartington when he was setting up the School for Social Entrepreneurs in Bethnal Green. So I had a pretty clear idea of the path that I was interested in, but I was equally quite open-minded about what each step of the journey might take. And I never planned to set up a property business or a workspace business. It was really just an accident.
Tell me how that accident happened. I'm always fascinated when, you know, people kind of stumble into something that isn't their normal area. So before 2009, what were you doing and what gave you the idea to set up the Trampery?
Well, so I was already based in Shoreditch. I'd moved there in 2003. At that time, it was the District of London that was really where a lot of the most provocative visual artists were living and working. There was a growing community of industrial designers, including notably Johnny Ive, who obviously went on to be relatively well known. And the fashion industry, the street fashion particularly, it was becoming a hotspot for that. But there was no technology element really to it. But I'd set up a software business there just because it felt like a good place to do any kind of innovation business. And I suppose round about 2007, 2008, it was very noticeable that that you were meeting more people who are moving to the area, wanting to set up new businesses. And time again, I met people who were struggling to find the right environment to establish themselves, that everybody was in their bedrooms or working in cafes. They didn't want to sign a five-year lease. And in a way, it's the classic situation that now you'd point to a co-working space and says that's the obvious solution. 2009, there weren't any co-working spaces in Shoreditch. And I'd visited Citizen Space and some of the very early forerunners in San Francisco in the preceding years. So I'd seen the way that those kinds of facility took this much more community-focused approach to working environments. I thought something like that could be interesting in Shoreditch, but I thought it needed to be a bit different as well to suit that community. But meanwhile, my full-time job was with a software business. So what I did was just shuffle the team around in the office and create an open plan workspace, really as a hobby project and just a way to give something back to the local community. I never intended it be more than that. So that was really the first fateful step.
And it's amazing to think of Shoreditch without co-working spaces, because now in London, it is the home of co-working spaces. It's where all of those shared offices are, pretty much. So back then, you take on this idea of sort of growing the first co-working space in Shoreditch. When did you realise that was actually probably more than a kind of side project, and it could actually be a successful business in its own right?
I think it was that first Christmas. So Christmas 2009, we had a Christmas party for all of our members at that first Trampery, which was on Deering Place. Everybody invited a couple of friends. There was something about the energy that night, and I think I realised how committed all of those initial members, who spanned from art galleries to software developers and designers, it was a very eclectic group. I think the penny dropped that this was actually something quite special, and I was going to have to make a decision about whether to curtail it or somehow follow it where it was leading.
And it's interesting, I mean, you didn't have a background in property, and you decided to sort of commit to this pretty much full time at that stage. Is there any sense in which you had to learn on your feet about the property industry? Because it's a complicated industry and it's quite capital intensive as well. It's quite difficult to get into. Did you find it difficult to sort of break into the property world?
Well, I think for innovation, there's a certain kind of benefit to being completely ignorant, because one of the patterns, again, in retrospect, that's clear from the projects the Trampery did over the next few years, is that if you looked at them as a property developer, you would say they were impossible. I had no idea that they were impossible, so I was just foolish enough to embark on them, and in one of the most expensive cities in the world, and it didn't give up. I think also, if you come from outside an industry, you don't really have the fixed conventional solutions in mind. So you know what you want to achieve, but you don't know very much about the path that you should follow to get there. So you try different things. And I think that in the early years was a great merit. In a strange way, it's only now that I'm getting to understand a bit more about the norms of the property industry. And I suppose as the Trampery increases in scale, we need to work more and more with people who are fully part of that industry. But the fact that we started as complete outsiders with no background and experience meant that we did things differently and kind of established an experimental culture that I hope will remain part of us, however large we get.
Just give us a few examples, or maybe one good example of how you did things in a slightly unconventional way. I mean, yes, you've got the norms of the property industry, which you, as you admit, didn't have great knowledge of. Were there one or two ways in which you sort of went in a different direction to how other property companies would have done it?
Also, in the early days, a lot of it was about how we sourced components for interiors, how we sourced furniture, and also how we did fit-outs, that even when we got fairly large, for instance, our Old Street workspace that we did in 2014, we actually sourced every piece of furniture in-house, mostly from eBay and street markets. We also sourced every door handle and electrical socket. We found a supplier that could provide 10,000 square feet of solid oak flooring in a budget that conventionally would only pay for chipboard. Then in the fit-out techniques, we worked a lot with people who did festival stages and things and had a very pragmatic approach to functional solutions that were much more lightweight in their execution than conventional construction techniques. So it meant that we were able to deliver a lot of spaces very quickly for something between a quarter and a half of what the normal budget would have been. And obviously, as we've expanded, we've used more and more of something closer to a conventional procurement technique. But there's still that pragmatism and kind of playful interest in improvising that underlies that. And I think that's, that, again, is a very useful heritage.
What do you make of the growth of, or rather the boom of the co-working industry? Obviously, you've been around almost a decade now with this company. But in that time, we've seen WeWork kind of come in such a big way into London and so many other cities, and loads of competitors. It's a very saturated market now. What do you make of that kind of boom, the saturation that we've got to?
When the Trampery started in 2009, I think most people looked at what we were doing and thought this was some curious, if delightful, niche in the massive commercial property industry. And to be honest, I never looked at it that way. It always seemed likely to me that this was going to turn out to be a wholesale change in the way that businesses used physical environments, because I suppose I came from a position that I'd always hated offices. I just loathed them. There was something so joyless and miserable about them. The way they used texture and material, there was a kind of, even in expensively done ones, there was a kind of cheapness and soullessness about them that seemed to erode the human qualities that you actually need to have happy people and creative people and good collaborations. So I always believed that was the wrong way to create working environments, and something that was much more socially centered, much more human centered, seemed to me the next generation. So I always thought that what we were doing as the Trampery was pioneering something that was going to become pretty much universal. And so I've been really delighted as the wave has swept from small businesses into increasingly large businesses, and that clearly the market has begun to segment in a very, very clear way from that. I still think we're maybe halfway through this revolution. There's a lot more to come.
When it comes to, you mentioned, you know, the effort that you put into the aesthetic and the fit out, there's something that, you know, we've been aware of here on the magazine and on the radio as well, that there's kind of a co-working aesthetic now, that you see the similar designs cropping up, and there's even a language that is associated with co-working spaces and shared workspaces. In a market which is pretty saturated, but equally which has a sort of shared language and a shared aesthetic, how do you show yourself to be different? How do you differentiate what you're offering to the market, to the rest of the companies out there?
Well, oddly, a lot of it comes down to how you feel when you step through the door of one of our facilities. There's something that you feel inside you that is about being welcome and about a kind of grounded energy around you. Like, I spend a lot of time watching people come into our buildings, and they look around and they smile. I'm very happy if they do that. And I'm also very happy that a lot of times, if a guest comes in and they sit down, if they're waiting for a meeting or something, one of our members could strike up a conversation with them, which isn't something that happens a lot with strangers in the outside world in London. A lot of the time people look at the Trampery and think that it's about the interiors and our design and so forth. But fundamentally, it's about culture and it's about communities and it's about things which are very hard to put your finger on and make tangible. But that's what we really work for, and that's what our members care about the most. And the rest of it is really a stage set that enables that to happen. And my feeling has been that so long as we remain committed to that and continue to really put our members at the center of our universe, then we will have a distinct position however crowded the market becomes.
How have you managed to do that? You mentioned there something quite intangible, you know, culture. How do you build a culture that is friendly and there's an atmosphere of collaboration? What are the kind of tricks of the trade to doing that in what is, you know, quite a big space?
I guess the first layer is about the physical fabric. That you have to really care about the interiors. It's no good treating it as some arm's length thing that you're outsourcing to a designer. However good they are, you have to be very involved in it and you have to really care about it. So you create spaces that provide moments and different habitats that nourish different parts of an individual and different elements of their working day. Secondly, the people that you recruit to your team are absolutely fundamental. That over the years, we've been incredibly fortunate to attract a succession of talented people who are personally very invested emotionally in the relationship that we establish with our members and care about our members' well-being and their success, that's completely irreplaceable. The relationships are the fundamental glue that make the community happen. Then thirdly, I suppose there's a layer of programming, of different activities that help to foster relationships and realize latent potential for valuable interactions between people. And over the years, we've got, I guess, a bit more scientific about how we do that, that there's now a set of practices and formats that's always evolving, that we know that we can deploy components of that in different situations to help to brew the cocktail that I guess is the end result that everybody's looking for.
Take us through now from, we said the company was founded in 2009. It's almost a decade later, so nine years later. Just talk us through how you've grown the company over the past 9 years. I mean, where are you based now? How big is the team? How many properties do you have? Yeah, what's that journey been like?
Well, so by the end of this year, I think we will have developed a total of 15 sites in London, and we'll have done that through an entirely bootstrapped process that we don't have external investors. So that's what you get from ignorance, in a way. That's an incredible achievement for a social enterprise to pull off. Not all of those sites are open now. Some of them were 1 or 2 year pop-ups, but we'll have 5 sites open at the end of this year. And the team that is delivering that is currently 20. We'll have a few more by the end of the year. And I suppose the biggest transition that's happened is from the hobby project that I described in 2009 through a stage where we were really thinking about the workspace as the underlying entity that we were focused on, to then a realization that what we were actually involved with was innovation districts. So I think by 2013, that understanding had set in. And so now everything that we do, both in the UK and abroad, is focused strategically on cultivating and growing innovation districts. So the first set of projects we did was all concerned with what the Cameron government branded as Tech City. And again, you said it's hard to think of a time when Shoreditch didn't have any co-working spaces. Equally, you only have to go back to 2008 to a time when nobody would have pointed to Shoreditch as an important innovation district in London. It seems extraordinary now, but that was the reality. And I have to say, I give great credit to David Cameron and to Rohan Silver for having backed Tech City and really helped to put it on the map. The Trampery made a big commitment to that project, working with the Prime Minister's Office and a lot with the Borough of Hackney to create workspaces that would help to provide the facilities that were needed for entrepreneurs coming to the district. But I think by 2014, we realised that the prices in the area had risen so dramatically that it was important to find a new district to cope with the next generation of growth. And so since 2015, we've really been focused on the Lee Valley, the stretch running from Tottenham in the north down to Poplar and Canary Wharf in the south. So all of our sites since 2015 have been organised on that line, and a lot of our collaborations with local government and educational institutions have also been lined up with that.
I wanted to come on to that because actually there's something rather timely about this, that you are currently in the process of opening Trampery Fish Island Village, which is in that sort of strip of East London. It's interesting that when you started the Trampery, the first people you had in the original building were fashion designers and kind of that side of the creative spectrum. And now you're kind of going back to that whole world and creating space for fashion, the fashion industry in London. Tell us a little bit about this new project.
We first looked at fashion in 2013. It seemed to be enjoying a renaissance in London after a marked decline since the 1970s. And out of all the creative industries, it seemed to be one that had the greatest potential for economic growth and also for employment creation. But that there were several pinch points, of which, in a way, the most glaring was the lack of affordable studio space for designers. The idea for Fish Island Village was really to try and create a very large-scale facility, most of which would be dedicated to emerging labels, to fashion tech businesses, and the surrounding ecosystem that they need in order to be able to prosper. And it was a question of finding a site where we could deliver that and offer it at rents that labels could actually afford. And very early on, we met Peabody, the housing association, and they were interested in ways that they could support innovative working environments alongside what they were doing with affordable housing. And very quickly, that cemented a discussion and a partnership that has led to this amazing project.
And just talk us through the scale of it, because it is quite impressive how much studio space you're going to have there.
When it opens, and the first phase will be ready for people to move in at the end of this year, it will actually be, I think, larger than all previous tramperies put together. So it is a large undertaking. It's a 6-acre site with 11 buildings on it, and the ground floors of all of those buildings will be trampery facilities. So it will feel very much like a village. We aren't just using the word as a kind of estate agent's shorthand. We will operate it and approach it the way that the social patterns of a village work. So it's going to have a total of 50,000 square feet of studio space, all at crazily low prices. But it will also have a large sampling and fabrication facility with high-spec equipment that emerging labels need to create their catwalk shows and their collections. It'll have a kind of community centre. It'll have a large co-working space. We'll have a members lounge, meeting and seminar rooms, and a cafe that is positioned so that everybody will pass it on their way to their studios. It'll have also a restaurant and bar that will be an important facility to all of the residents as well as to our members, and we'll be delivering a range of free business support and training programs there that are targeting different growth stages of the labels, from people who are maybe in the first year of establishing their brand to people who are already doing catwalk shows and selling in multiple territories worldwide and are really preparing themselves for the next stage of growth.
And for you as a business, how does it work giving away studio space at such affordable prices? I mean, are you going to cram people in, or is it? I mean, what's the business model behind that?
Quite the contrary. These studios are going to be cavernous. I think the lowest ceiling height on the whole complex is 4 meters. A lot of the ceilings are 6 meters high, and some of them are 10 meters. High, which defies the logic of the industry of it. It's only possible on that site because of the alignment that we have with Peabody, that they're a charity, that they don't exist to maximise their profits, just as the Trampery is a social enterprise. And so even though they're focused on housing and we're focused on workspace, there was a will to come up with an economic model that maximised the benefit to the community of creative professionals, and particularly the fashion industry, whilst at the same time satisfying Peabody's requirements to generate a reasonable income from the site. But it took 2 years to work the financial model out. It was a phenomenally complex undertaking, but I have to say, I think it'll be worth it.
Are there actually enough fashion brands, kind of emerging fashion brands in London, to take on that space? I mean, I assume there are, but it's one of those things where, you know, do you kind of create the market yourself, or are they already there waiting and looking for spaces and not finding it?
In 2013, when we were doing our original research that led us to open the Trampery London Fields, it was our very first dedicated fashion facility, we found something like 3,000 emerging labels within a mile radius of the location. That number's growing. Looking at Hackney Wick specifically, the growth rate of fashion-related businesses in that community, which is obviously one of London's most important creative clusters, the growth rate for the fashion businesses is 10% ahead of the London baseline. So we know the market's there, and we're working closely with the British Fashion Council and the London College of Fashion, both of whom continuously research that market. So we know the need is there. And I think in part because there are so few affordable facilities within Zone 2, we're not really in competition with a lot of other providers. We know that the need's there and that there's a scarcity of provision.
You mentioned that that building is going to be, or rather that series of buildings in East London is going to be open starting from the end of this year. Do you have other things in the pipeline that you're now moving on to, or is this kind of, do you have to be there at the beginning of Fish Island Village and make sure that it kind of goes off, sort of starts smoothly? Are you already moving on to the next project, or are you looking at this one still for a while?
Fish Island Village is by far the largest project that we're executing at the moment. But somewhat like the famous London buses, we had a bunch of seeds that we'd sown, and somehow they've all ended up coming to fruition at the same time. So just last week, we announced another project in Hackney Wick called the Trampery on the Gantry, which is providing 10,000 square feet of studio space for the creative industries. And that's, we're doing that with Here East, the innovation destination, and the architects Hawkins Brown. And that's a really experimental project. It's actually using prefabricated timber housing technology as a way to provide affordable studio space in locations where a conventional construction approach wouldn't work. So that's one project that's happening right now. We're also about to announce a pretty large project up in Tottenham that will be squarely targeting entrepreneurs in the communities up there, where the unemployment rate is amongst the highest in London. Then we are also working with Poplar Harker to develop a facility in Poplar that will be for earlier stage fashion labels, and in a way will operate in conjunction with the Fish Island site. And besides that, there are a couple more projects as well that we're not able to talk about yet. But yes, it's been quite a juggling act, but always Fish Island Village has been the real centre of our focus.
So you've got quite a lot to keep you busy over the next few years, it sounds like.
Yes, and I think it had reached the point where the team at the Trampery pretty much shackled me if I gave any hint of another project on the horizon. I think this is probably enough.
And I'm afraid that's all we have time for on today's show. Thank you very much to Charles Armstrong for coming in and sharing the story of the Trampery. This show was produced by Daniel Bache and mixed and edited by Kieran Matthew Banerjee. I'm Matt Alagaya. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.